For more information about Ancient Dragon Zen Gate and Tygon's teaching, please visit us at ancientdragon.org.
Good evening.
Evening.
Did you want to say something? Can you introduce me?
Oh, I'd be glad to introduce you. Hello, this is Hogetsu, Lori Belzer, priest here, and welcome everyone, and Hogetsu is going to speak to us tonight.
Yes.
Hogetsu is our tenzo, a very important position in any temple, the chief cook, so she provides our food in various ways.
I'm suspecting that some people might be students. Is that true?
True.
Who's a student? Okay. So some of you skipped the meditation situation, right? But I have a surprise, because I'm actually going to give some meditation instruction. So, what I'd like to do this evening is explore the samadhi of water. And when I mentioned to someone I was going to speak about water, they said, that's a profound subject. And didn't show up tonight, so maybe they're bored with water, but I found water very interesting. So, many of you may know or may have heard of this term of called samadhi, which is often a consciousness derived from a concentrated meditative state. I also, for you students, I Wikipedia'd it, and Wikipedia-ed it, however, whatever that verb is. Doesn't sound as good as Google. But I was impressed by the Wikipedia definition, because samadhi, the practice of a concentrated meditative state, really was around long before Buddha utilized it. So in India, was pretty common way of attempting to establish a certain state of mind, which there might have been a hope would transcend suffering or the problems of everyday experience. Buddha's very interested just in staying with suffering in everyday experience, but you know, some people like to get out of that, and samadhi can be used in that context. But according to Wikipedia, samadhi is a non-dualistic state of consciousness in which the consciousness of the experiencing subject becomes one with the experienced object. So water will be our object, and we tend to be the subjects. I guess you could switch it around, but that might be a fancy. So I say let's stick with that. And the mind becomes still in this state and one-pointed or concentrated, even though the person does remain conscious. So hopefully no one will lose consciousness during this event. It also goes on to say that in Buddhism, samadhi can also refer to an abiding, I like that word, abiding, in which the mind becomes very still but does not merge with the object of attention. And thus, the person is able to observe and gain insight into the changing flow of experience. So there's kind of this idea of samadhi as being like totally one with something, so there's like no kind of separation. But then in Buddhism, it's kind of extended where you're both one and you're not one. And experienced dragon meditators. I'm talking tonight because I want to encourage you to explore your samadhi. And students, explore yours as well. So, it says this object can be ever flowing, like in Zazen, our moment-to-moment experience. So in Zazen, we sort of don't traditionally pick one object like water and hang with it, but we observe whatever is coming into our experience. And so moment by moment, we probably have a little tiny object. Like we notice a thought flit by. We notice discomfort in our bodies. That's kind of an object, you could say. But they're kind of lightly touched in zazen, allegedly. However, you know, we can sustain a focus on something. The breath is often recommended when people first start sitting, counting breaths. Even some Zen heretics count their breath to calm down. And you might say samadhi's kind of cool because there's these dual functions, I would say. One being settling and calming. So when we focus on an object, that helps us calm down. So our minds aren't so scattered if we're focusing just on one thing, right? Like the pain in our knee. Nothing like pain to help us focus. Or we might be focusing on our posture, which is an omnipresent focus for Zen meditators because we tend to sit very still in this kind of very prescribed way. So stability, you know, helps us maintain kind of an uprightness. Then the other function, number two of many, is this kind of clear seeing or insight or wisdom practice. So when you actually are able to sustain attention and some settledness on whatever objects you're paying attention to, you start to, and you can investigate these. You can investigate, like, oh, wow, what's that impulse to move that I have? You can slightly not grab onto it, but just stay with it. When you're doing that, you could say this becomes kind of an antidote to the self, to this addiction to a fixed self, because you see everything is flowing. And also, there's a wider opening to how interconnected we are, hopefully. So when you actually explore anything following the stream, you could say to the source, you see that there's a profound intimacy that we have with the entire world. So kind of there's samadhis in that category too. But tonight, I thought I'd do something a little different for us Zen meditators. So this is a heretical practice for you students who are, and other people who are here for the first time. But I'd like to actually invite us to all swim together in the samadhi of water and meditate with water as an object of our abiding. So I'd like to guide us through this, if that's okay. And we'll have a little period of meditation without bells, indeterminate. And it will be a guided meditation, which is something a little different. We usually kind of just go off on our own. So what I'd like everyone to do is assume your position of meditation, your posture of meditation. So get yourself comfortable. And for those who are new, there's someone back there who's sitting in what looks like seiza. Do you do tea ceremony or something? You, yeah. Yoga?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so you're going to be comfortable in some form of Vajrasana for about 10 minutes? That's going to be okay? Cool.
Yes.
Okay. So make yourselves comfortable. And, you know, we want to attain sort of an upright, dignified bodily attitude. And what I'd like you to do is lightly close your eyes, something that we don't traditionally do in zazen, but have an upright posture and just gently close your eyes so that you can turn your gaze inward. And that inner gaze, take that inward towards your posture. So begin noticing your foundation, wherever your knees or feet and hips meet the ground, and feel that sense of groundedness. Root your body firmly. Support your torso with that foundation. Soften your belly. Breathe naturally through your nose. Maintain a straight spine, but tuck your chin slightly so that your kind of top of your head is moving upward towards the ceiling. Relax your shoulders and open your heart area so that your chest is upright and soft. Your hands can be placed in the meditation position, so that would be taking your right hand, palm up, and placing it in your lap, with your pinky finger lightly touching your abdomen. Then take your left hand and put it directly on top of your right hand, also those pinkies touching contact with your abdomen. And then take your thumb tips and place them together so that you have a round oval. Enjoy 2 or 3 nice inhales and exhales. Just start to become aware of your breath. Natural. Take your attention and place it on your breath. Notice the quality of your breathing. Is it soft, ragged, shallow, deep? Just notice without judgment. And follow the breath as it enters your nostrils with each inhale and exits with each exhale. Now, follow the inhale into your body. Become aware of the water circulating throughout your entire body, in your blood, in your bodily fluids, in your digestive system, in your organs. Note that over 2/3 of your body is water. Now notice your breath on the exhale, on your next exhale. And see if you can notice the moisture in your exhale. Molecules of water vapor actually return to the atmosphere with each exhale. So we're breathing out water. Now, Notice the contact of water in the air's humidity on your skin. Draw your attention maybe to your cheek and see if you can feel the moisture in the air this evening. Then move outside of yourself and your body and bring your awareness outward to the vast expanse of water nearby, to the Great Lake Michigan. And as Michigan flows into all the bodies on the surface, bodies of water on the surface of the earth, through rivers, waterfalls, and oceans, this watery home to many life forms, corals, fishes, amphibians, water that sustains all life. Water penetrating the earth's surface to the roots and atop the branches of trees that aid in photosynthesis. Water perpetuating the cycle of life. Graciously accepting whatever is given to it. Follow the water up to the clouds, filling the clouds. Gathering to produce raindrops. Following the stream of water, scattered in small concentrations of molecules throughout the entire universe. There's water in the dust of the moon, in the vast reaches of interstellar clouds, in comets that orbit our solar system. Begin to return to this watery place right here. The water of your body and mind. Water is life. And then enjoy the water in your breathing. And when you're ready, just open your eyes return to where we are now in this room together. Kathy, you could ring the bell now, maybe. Quick trip. So I want to just check in with people about your experience. Any comments or questions since we have a student body here? Anything,
Scott? I'd like to thank you for bringing this up because this is an extremely fundamental topic. I think there's a kind of deep forgetting of water in many aspects of our culture. For example, if you look at maps, maps don't reveal the fact that there are clouds. Mm-hmm. And even satellite maps, like on Google Earth, the clouds are painstakingly removed by stitching together areas of clear ground. So, you know, people prepare satellite imagery, remove the clouds from satellite images like Google Earth. So we can easily forget how important water is and how it kind of pervades everything. Mm-hmm. How it's the foundation for all life.
Oh, I did not know they took clouds away in those pictures. Oh.
Especially long, but long enough to try to start wrapping my head around the idea of emptiness. And I like the way Howard, when you mentioned that two-thirds of our body is made of water, and then thinking about it coming out of our breath and then it's circulating and kind of showing the lack of boundary between love.
Mm-hmm. That's when it relates to emptiness, sort of, right? Yeah. Good job.
You're the one who did it.
That's what you think. Yes?
At first, I kind of had a hard time really getting into, just like the water thing in general. It was like, I was trying really hard to do it the right way.
Uh-huh.
And in doing that, I realized that I missed out on the simplest things, by trying to visualize the rain I saw from mm-hmm. yesterday. I missed out on the fact that the body still functions when you're when you don't even really realize it. Mm-hmm. I noticed that when I swallowed and I didn't realize it, I'm just oh, it's the saliva in my mouth. It's water, Weird enough, so.
You are awakened. So this is the great project, right, of meditation, to see how easy it is to move our attention away from what's happening and to want to get it right, to control or to make water into something else I like better. I like comets better than digestive fluids or something, But you actually saw, that that's what's happening. I think this is a great help of having an object of meditation, because sometimes when zazen, if you don't have an object, a discrete object, it's easy to kind of space out or not really pay attention. But when you have an object, you can actually come back and go, oh, wow, look what I'm doing. I'm Oh my God, I'm not doing this right. Oh, I just missed. I just missed out on life. That's also known as confession, acknowledging, admitting that, oops, I'm off there a little bit. I missed it. Like, oops, I just like took away these clouds from this picture. And, you know, there is a saying that the protection of all beings is accomplished through the acknowledgement of one's own mistakes. So there's a deep teaching, so I really want to thank you for paying attention so diligently, sincerely. Donna?
There's an animated children's show, maybe for adults too, but I think it's called The Magic School Bus. Have you guys heard of that? But there's the magic school bus and then in the water cycle. And so
great.
I wish I could think of the teacher's name.
Miss
Frizzle.
Frizzle?
Yeah, it's Frizz.
Miss Frizz. Wait, Frizzle? Frizz or
Miss Frizz?
Miss Frizzle or Frizzle.
Frizzle. Frizz. I like it.
Miss Frizzle. And you get in this magic school bus and it takes you. So she takes you through the kids through the whole water cycle. And so that's what I was kind of picturing when you just did that. And so that was kind of a neat meditation, because I've seen this cartoon a number of times, and she does go through like each of the you know, breathing out and all the different kinds of all the stuff, so the whole cycle. And so to do that was really kind of a neat thing, because I felt like I was part of the magic school bus.
Yeah.
So thanks for that. I appreciate that very much.
I'm all in favor of magic school buses. I actually heard yesterday on National Public Radio, there's a show, and I don't know the name of it, but there was an interview with a man, some kind of botanist, who went down to Brazil in the Amazon and did some psychedelics. And his trip was taking a vine down, and he became a water molecule on a conveyor belt in photosynthesis. And I thought, don't need any drugs to do that. Just a little bit of Zen meditation, and you're right there. But there was something profound, I think, in wisdom traditions about being in touch with the elemental in our experience, which encouraged me, even though water could be a boring topic, to speak to you about it. Yes?
Well, one thing is I just was definitely aware of my heightened, like, a sense of the humidity, my own humidity,
good.
And our humidity, and all the wetness of the saliva and the mouth and everything as well. And at the point when you were talking about the Great Lakes all connecting to the ocean and everything, I found my mind went right to the water in the Gulf.
Yes.
I just felt so sad.
Yes.
And I was thinking about the death there. There was death, toxicity there. And I had to force myself to sort of become unglued from that. Like when we're talking about the interstellar clouds, I'm like, okay, I'm forcing myself to stop being so attached to that feeling or that sense or that sadness. It's just on my mind.
Mm-hmm.
But,
so, of course, you can take that sadness as an object of meditation at some point. Of course, I was trying to tell you what to do, which is always the danger with guided meditations, you know, but it's great that you noticed that. I felt the same thing as I was even thinking about water today, that there's, you know, on our altar we have, you know, an homage to people affected or by whatever is affected, all living beings affected by that tragedy, but the water still accepts that oil, you know, but it's painful. And so often in our meditation we encounter pain and sadness. It's healthy, actually.
I was going to say something about this in the announcements, but it's appropriate to say it now. Because, I very much appreciate the beautiful meditation and teaching on the Buddha nature of water that you've given us. That water, like everything, is totally interconnected, but we are water. We are connected with water. We drink water. And, you know, in so many ways, in all the different ways you expressed it. And part of the Bodhisattva idea is to see the interconnectedness of all things, to appreciate it, to feel the gratitude. But also there's the precepts of benefiting all beings and protecting life. So, yeah, this is a great sadness for the whole planet now, for certainly for people in the Gulf states who's, and not so far from where you grew up, Hogetsu, where the water system has been devastated. And for, I don't know how, probably some of you have seen the pictures of the turtles and the pelicans and the animals. And anyway, the effects of this are going to be with us for decades. It's really a great tragedy. So part of water is tears and part of water is sadness. And it's important, the first noble truth in Buddhism is that there is sadness, that things don't work as they can. And now we humans have contributed to this terrible event. So amongst the various other events that I will announce later in our announcements, I'll mention now, since it fits with this, that this Thursday evening, as part of our Peace and Environment Forums, which we have many months, we'll have a talk by the head of the Chicago Rainforest Action Network, Deborah Michaud, who's also sat here, about British Petroleum is, it turns out, not just spewing into the Gulf of Mexico, but also their tar sands refinery project in northern Canada has been destroying indigenous communities there and is very damaging to the environment. It's a very damaging way of getting oil, and it's being piped into the Midwest, and the refinery for it is 60 miles from Chicago, and they're spewing thousands of gallons of waste product into our Lake Michigan every day. So part of dealing with sadness is being informed about what's happening, how we respond and express, how, you know, water has tremendous power. So there's also the meditation on the Colorado River and the Grand Canyon and the gentle quality of water, which I felt expressed in the way you talked about it tonight, Hogetsu. So anyway, this there are ways to respond, and we don't always know how to respond, and we each have our own way to respond. But anyway, we try and have these forums to be aware of how we are connected through earth, water, fire, air, through the environment. And so anyway, this Thursday evening at 7:15, there are flyers up front. There will be a talk about the tar sands and the effect on Lake Michigan. So, and I add this to what you said about the just appreciating the wondrousness of water and how we are water and water is us and how this all flows together. And this part of our practice, big part of our practice, is this samadhi, this swimming in our connectedness. So, anyway, that's an early announcement about that event, so I won't have to repeat it later. But thank you, Brooks, for bringing it up. Your name also is water.
Yes.
And we all are flowing. And how do we take care of this great jewel of water in our planet? This is a great koan for all of humanity now. So again, thank you for bringing this up. I didn't mean to close the conversation, but other responses to Hogetsu, or maybe you have something more to say on this.
This is a good point about koan. That might be the third meditative aspect. Remember I mentioned stability, calmness, and wisdom, but also an object of meditation, just a word, water, can be used as a koan or a turning word. And clearly, Brooks, you used it, and I don't know who this person is there in the corner of the chair, but what's your name?
Debbie.
Debbie did. Tigan did. I bet you all did. So there's practices with these objects that transcend or go beyond objectification, but open us. I want to say dragons abide in water. It's said that at the bottom of the ocean, is where the sutras were hidden until we were ready to hear them. And a dragon took someone down there and said, you're going to get some of these teachings and bring them back up. So the ocean has a lot of deep qualities. I have not heard Buddhist stories about dragons going down and bringing up tar balls and oil and turtles that are covered in deadly substances, but my guess is those exist. I want to just say something kind of briefly about Dogen and water. And that Dogen has said, Dogen actually has given us instructions, the founder of our school of Buddhism has given us instructions on the samadhi of water in many places, actually. But here's a quote from the Mountains and Waters Sutra, famous, wonderful sutra by Dogen, and maybe I'll talk about that when I give them my next Dharma talk. But water, says Dogen, is the actualization of the fundamental point, is the expression of reality. Buddha ancestors, such as ourselves, always take up water and make it their body and mind and make it their thought. So even Dogen encouraged us to have water as an object of meditation. And I'll just read another little blurb from Dogen. I like to leave you with like a bedtime story. I was going to read a children's story about a raindrop, but knew I was going to run out of time. So let me lay a little Dogen on you. Here, I like this. The existence of water is, this is from the 13th century Japan. So it's pretty amazing how relevant it is right now to our lives. The existence of water is not concerned with past, future, present, or our everyday life. Yet, water is reality. Where Buddha ancestors reach, that's all of us, water never fails to appear. And because of this, Buddha ancestors always take up water and make it their body and mind. Now, human beings know well that water is what is in the ocean and what is in the river. But they do not know what dragons and fish see as water and use as water. Do not foolishly suppose that what we see as water is used as water by all other beings. You who study with Buddhas should not be limited to human views when you're studying with water. You should study how you view the water used by Buddhas. And you should study whether there is water or no water in the house of Buddha. So, my hope is that to encourage you with an awareness of water. I had some friends from San Francisco Zen Center stay with me the other day, and I noticed that whenever my friends from Zen Center stay with me, they don't turn on the water when they first brush their teeth, and they don't flush the toilet after every time they urinate. They actually brush their teeth and then spit out and then rinse the water kind of quickly. And that's what you kind of learn when you're in this monastic setting. And they also, you know, every time they pee, they don't shut the lid. They just kind of leave the water there. And when it gets kind of, you know, a little too much for everyone, then they kind of bow to it and flush the toilet. So there's this profound understanding of water. And I think this kind of deep awareness might have helped forestall this current suffering in the Gulf if people had been paying attention to the water. I do feel that the people at BP, they probably, British Petroleum folks, some of them, I bet the people who worked on those rigs, I bet they had some awareness of water, maybe even some reverence for it, maybe some respect for it, but somewhere somebody wavered in that awareness, forgot, you know, got intoxicated, like, you know, maybe we'll get some more money more quickly, and so we'll keep drilling, you know, and all of a sudden there's an accident. And this is how we are with our lives, you know. Like you mentioned, oh, I just noticed, like, you know, I was kind of got off balance a little bit. I couldn't pay attention to water. This happens all the time. I forget about water myself a lot. I'm sorry to say. But I am hoping that our practice of water will benefit the vast and fragile waters of our planet. So thank you very much.